Skylife by Anne McGuire. Music and production by Wayne Grimm. Reading, additional sound effects, and the song You Make the Sun Come Up by Anne McGuire. Ona lay on her back in the grass and scanned the sky for the jet. She'd hear it before she'd see it, and by then it would be too late. Light travels faster than sound, she poeted to herself. That was a scientific fact. The sound of it was separate from the sight of it, but she was learning to spot the planes first and not wait for the sound of engines, because by the time she heard the plane, it might have already dipped below the horizon line. There it was, and then came the sound. She wondered if it was true that people were living up there, old people, never coming down again. She pictured them in their beds, tubes protruding from their skin, white-clothed nurses in starched hats tending carefully to the potions being pumped into their long-lived veins. It seemed strange, but she'd read the Life magazine article and saw the pictures that were being sent down via weekly news shoot capsules. Yes, she could believe it. Ants were crawling up her legs, and she could no longer bear it. She got up to shake them off as her brother Charlie approached, casting a short midday shadow over her. "Do you think that's them up there?" he asked. "Of course. It's 2:30, and according to Life, we are directly under its sky course this week," she answered smartly, not wanting to show her own doubt, sharing her confidence. Charlie and Ona stood together in silence and watched the jet disappear below their horizon. They walked back to the house. Thank you. Nurse Milipetus, in an effort to curb slack work by her team, had to close the shades on the windows until further notice. That's how she worded it in the crew-wide memo after she learned that the sunshine-starved crew had been taking turns sitting in the sunbeam while they were supposed to be dumping waste chutes over Lake Superior. A plumbing mishap. She knew that the only way to keep the other nurses in line was to punish them all for the sin of one, though in this case, it was the sin of all. It was a military-style punishment, and it worked. The other nurses, all paid volunteers, would slowly fall in line and share duties and earn sunbeam exposure according to the rules. Even Nurse Milipetus got the same amount of sun as the others, as stated in her employment contract. As it happened, the punishment period would be ending at the next fueling, which was in 6 hours. She could feel the crew's lethargy shifting towards hope. If we could just limit the amount of oxygen for Mrs. Gray for the next 6 hours, she thought loudly to herself. Mrs. Gray was one of the sicker life flyers. After the mid-air refuel maneuver and supply drop, they would be able to relax for another week. And if stories from the ground were true, the new stem cell treatment for Mr. Clarison would be drop-loaded on deck as well, possibly delaying his death. She walked over to him and waited for him to speak.
"Did you know that butterflies see differently than us, due to their special eyes?"
he asked her, slowly. "No," she said, checking his pulse. "It's not as if they're seeing anything important, are they?"
"The world looks different to them. Isn't that interesting?"
he asked, with more seriousness, and she knew he was leading her into the usual conversation of questions No answers. This could go on if she didn't nip it in the bud. If what you are getting at is that we could do something innovative with how they see, yes. Otherwise, I don't see butterfly sight as being important.
Yes, if we could utilize their skill sight, we would see ultraviolet colors not detected by the human eye.
For some reason, that interested her. She needed time to think.
Nurse Fields, she called. Could you take this temperature for me, please?
Fields, the only redhead on the plane, knew her boss was trying to avoid more conversation with old man Clairson. Out of habit, Fields walked over to the old man's bedside and waited.
Ah, Miss Fields, how are you today? Said the patient.
Very well, sir. Shall I get you some grape juice?
She asked with forced brightness. Not waiting for an answer, she turned and started making her way through the maze of the long body of the plane. Her mind was someplace else.
Are we over Iowa? Minnesota? Why am I here? Someone get me out of this nightmare.
But it would not be as easy as that. And like the contract said, sign up for life. Life. What had become of it up here in this tin tube flying against time, reversing age and extending the years? And for what, she wondered. That was what the scientists had predicted after a series of decades-long tests with mice, monkeys, and eventually human volunteers. And now she had become one of them, an official life flyer. She passed through the canteen corridor and caught the smell of curry. She fumbled in her skirt pocket to find the drinks cabinet key and found it dangling on the end of her little Me Without End keychain. That was the name of this government-run enterprise, Me Without End Airlines. The slogan, Fly With Us Forever, took on a new meaning shortly after she signed up for this embarkation in the sky. She grabbed a grape drink and hurried back to her patient.
Well, is my temperature a normal 97.3 degrees altitude?
Mr. Clairson asked while holding the thermometer between his teeth, the sight of which, for a moment, broke the spell of the nagging why thoughts that dogged Nurse Fields.
Your altitemp is perfect, sir. Nothing to worry about. She answered and looked directly into his old, old eyes.
What's the point, was what she was thinking while her face said, I care.
Thank you. problema aí na antena, ok, Wellington? Enfim.
That night, Ona waited to hear the next passing of the plane. It was hot and buggy outside, and so she made herself comfortable on the porch by lay-fainting across the old couch with a cold cloth on her forehead. The sun had set in slow speed, and she watched the last pink trace of daytime fade into gray behind the trees as the dark bowl of night eventually rotated into place and clipped itself on to the western edge of things. Charlie was in the living room watching TV with their mom and dad and their oldest brother, Mark. Ona could hear the music from the closing credits to her least favorite show, Gunsmoke, which signaled that the news would soon come on, 10 p.m. Through the large windows between the porch and the interior of the house, she could see Charlie get up from the floor. He walked onto the porch. "Almost time," he whispered, and walked past her through the screen door. "I'm sitting on the front step." She set down the cool cloth and got up with renewed energy. She loved this time of day, when the exactness of night came down upon them. As the air cooled, the front steps would still hold some of the sun's radiation. She dipped her toe out into the night as if checking the temperature of a pool, daintily pressing her big toe and then her whole foot into the cement. She liked its clean, gritty feel. It was still warm. Charlie took the bottom step and set his feet in the cool grass, while she lay on the top step and pressed her cheek into the warmth of the solid, flat stoniness of it. It was a perfect night for plain looking. No moon, dark, starry. The mosquitoes were not so bad now. From the inside of the house, she could hear her mother saying, "Mark, Please clean up the popcorn, and what are Oni and Charlie up to? Then silence, but for the evening news.
Scientists today reported that today's sun count was above normal, signaling a return to high Earth temps for the foreseeable.
No wonder the steps were so warm. Charlie stood up. Better view down there, he said, as he pointed his arm into the darkness and disappeared into its inky well. They heard the faraway, foamy whir of the plane going through their sky view. They spotted it immediately. Blue lights on both wingtips and the flashing white. Easier to see if you didn't look directly at it. Ona raised herself off the cement and walked slowly into the darkness, where Charlie stood in the quiet of the gravel road. She wriggled her toes into the gravel and it pierced the soles of her feet. They stood there together, watching the plane make its quick appearance in their sky. The plane crossed from east to west in the south. There were no trees blocking their view. In less than 2 minutes, it was gone. Show over. Waiting up for the next one? She asked Charlie. Maybe. Want to go down to the bridge? He asked. No, it's time for me to... She started to answer, and he finished her sentence. To write to Molly Beth. Right, she replied, smiling into the darkness. Charlie disappeared again, and she stepped into the wet lawn and wiped the dust off her bare feet. As she crept through the grass, she wondered where Mark was. Ona knew he was planning his customary nighttime attack, and she ran back up to the front steps. They were still warm, and she patted the bottoms of her feet on their dry, welcoming absorbance and went inside without letting the screen door slam. She wanted to slip upstairs unnoticed, but first she poked her head into the living room to say goodnight. Her dad sat on the green couch with the little gold threads running through it, closest to the TV, with her mom at the other end. Dad was reading the paper and listening to the news. Mark was gone. She said, "Good night," and her mom gently said, "Kiss good night." Ona stepped over to her mom on her side of the sofa and bent her head close to her mom's, her hair falling around her face. As she did this, her mother reached her hand up to greet Ona's head like a cat, petting her a bit. Ona kissed her mom lightly on the cheek through her messy hair. They said goodnight again, her mom adding, "You need to wash your hair." She lingered there for a moment. The news continued, but it was not interesting, so she quietly untangled her hair from her mom's hand and went up. The hallway light was not on, but she didn't need it with the banister to guide her. She navigated the darkness to the doorway of her room and grasped the cool porcelain knob and closed the door quietly behind her. She flipped on the light and sat down at her little flame maple desk. Her telewriter machine was waiting there for her. She pressed the big red on button and then typed on the soft keyboard, "Molly Beth, are you there?" She waited. It always fascinated her that they used the color red for on. The telewriter machine was essentially a telephone with a typewriter attached to it. It was made for deaf people. But after they cured deafness, the machine became popular with children mostly around the world as a way to talk without sound. She would make a full report to Molly Beth of her plane sightings that day and include a description of their supper that night, summer squash, meatloaf, and blue earth potatoes. Molly Beth had typed to her the night before, but Ona had been busy watching heat lightning, or was it sheet lightning? It had been a cloudy night, with no way to see the planes, but the lightning was an excellent second-best show, she thought. As she sat thinking about the strangeness of lightning, heated or sheeted, she knew Mark would soon be sneaking around the house, waiting to pounce. Just then, she heard the screech of a barn owl up in the pasture. The scary screeching was a disturbance in the nighttime calm. She decided to wait another 10 minutes for a response before turning off the telewriter, and knowing she would hear the keys of the telewriter hit the rand if a message came through.
so she could get up and go to the bathroom. Quietly, she listened at the door to hear if anyone was outside of it. No, all quiet. But as soon as she opened the door, she immediately felt it pushing back at her. It did no good for her to protest, and so she quietly shrieked a joyful, protesting laugh as Mark whispered, "Orange Crush is here." And using tickle torture, he maneuvered her into the corner of her bedroom near the door. She didn't mind Orange Crush, which was, simply put, a game wherein he, the larger sibling, pushed her or Charlie into any free corner and steadily pressed them into it like silly putty until he got tired and they squirmed free. She was laughing hysterically in silence when Molly Beth's return message came through the telewriter. "Mark, let me go now," she managed to say, and he quietly slipped away.
Thank you.
Head nurse Millipedis turned away from old man Clairson and looked over her small domain. This long, thin, and somewhat circular metal tube contained all she needed for her life of agreed-upon sacrifice. From its private pod bedrooms on the lower deck to its space-aged hospital on top, it was not unlike a sea ship in its compact completeness. Sinking would have meant falling to the bottom of the sky instead of the bottom of the ocean. Just as gruesome, but its streamlined design and magnetic corrector held it high in the sky, and there had been no accidents, save the baby incident 3 years ago. She liked being second in command of this flying life support system. But even before Skylife, she had loved her job as a nurse doctor. It was the highest allowable achievement for women in medicine. If it hadn't been for a childhood diagnosis of overactive imaginationism and the subsequent discovery of her higher-than-normal femilect, she may never have been spared the role of mother mate. It was a role she did not want. And once she made it into med school and had become enamored of the techniques for treating wounded rabbit esophagi, she knew what she would be, a nurse doctor. The term had been coined especially for nurses at her level. Oh, how she loved meta-talk and all the wonderful jargon of her select class. Then, just as she knew she must stop daydreaming, she caught sight of Dr. Preston entering the sky ward. She wondered how often he engaged in self-love, and wondered again if the other nurses were reading her thoughts by the look in her eyes. "Good afternoon. It's time to prep the waste chutes," Dr. Preston mentioned commandingly. With that, the nurse on waste duty, Nurse Dine, pulled on latex gloves and began the one-hour prep check to make sure all waste tubes had been properly emptied into the chute canisters and that each pod was properly sealed at altitude to prevent any ugly accidents. Nurse Millipedis was happy to be spared this chore. Meanwhile, Nurse Fields stole a quick peek out of one of the portholes in the canteen while she was running to get another artificially colored and sweetened drink. It was nighttime. No sun. She could see the lights of a large metropolitan area. As her months of service turned into a year of service, she began recognizing cities, especially near home, and this one looked like Minneapolis.
Thank you.
Skylife by Anne McGuire. Music and production by Wayne Grimm. Reading, additional sound effects, and the song You Make the Sun Come Up by Anne McGuire.